greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
My opening serve is U.S. Open tennis. World number one Novak Djokovic of Serbia will play Gael Monfils of France in the first men's singles semifinal later Friday in New York City. And that will be followed by the second semifinal between Stan Wawrinka of Switzerland and Kei Nishikori of Japan. Of the four men left, Djokovic has by far the proudest Grand Slam pedigree. He has 12 major titles, including U.S. Open trophies in 2011 and 2015. Wawrinka has two Grand Slam titles, the 2014 Australian Open and the 2015 French Open. Monfils and Nishikori are both bidding for their first major title. This is the best showing by Monfils at a Grand Slam tournament since he reached the semifinals of the French Open in 2008. And Nishikori's best Grand Slam showing was runner-up to Croatia's Marin Cilic in the 2014 U.S. Open final. Meanwhile, Saturday's women's singles final at the U.S. Open will feature Germany's Angelique Kerber and the Czech Republic's Karolina Pliskova. Kerber eliminated Caroline Wozniacki of Denmark in straight sets Thursday, 6-4 and 6-3, while Pliskova upset American star Serena Williams 6-2 and 7-6. It marked the second straight year that Serena was beaten in the semifinals of the U.S. Open, and she saw her bid for a record 23rd major title foiled for now. At the post-match news conference, Serena talked about left knee problems that limited her mobility on the court, but she refused to use fatigue as an excuse for her surprising loss.
Okay, I'm not going to repeat myself. I wasn't tired from yesterday's match. I'm a professional player. I've been playing for over 20 years. If I can't turn around after 24 hours and play again, then I shouldn't be on tour. So I definitely wasn't tired from yesterday's match at all. It wasn't a five-hour match. I've practiced 3 hours, so it wasn't that huge of a deal.
American tennis star Serena Williams speaking after her semifinal loss at the U.S. Open in New York. Meanwhile, with her victory over Serena, you could say it was that huge of a deal for Karolina Pliskova.
It doesn't happen often, you know, that you're playing, especially semifinal against Serena on center court here in New York, and it doesn't happen often that you're in the final of Grand Slam, so I'm really excited to be there and really excited to be in a Grand Slam final for the first time in my life.
Karolina Pliskova also beat Serena Williams's older sister, Venus, in the fourth round of the U.S. Open on her way to her first Grand Slam final. Landon Donovan, the all-time leading scorer for the USA men's national team, as well as in Major League Soccer, is ending a 21-month retirement and returning to the Los Angeles Galaxy.
So as some people may not yet know, or some people are just hearing, I've decided to come out of retirement, it sounds crazy to say, to join the Galaxy to play for the rest of the season. And it's a crazy thing when I sit down and think about it, but in the end, when I take away all the layers of it, I'm really excited, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I really hope it can be beneficial for this club.
The 34-year-old Donovan is widely considered the most accomplished player in American soccer history, and Major League Soccer has named its Most Valuable Player award after him. Donovan says he decided to return to the Galaxy after watching several of the club's key players get injured in recent weeks.
After the Galaxy Vancouver game, almost 2 weeks ago, that game, if people remember, there was three injuries, Van Damme, Gerard, and Giassi. And we found out later the next week that Giassi was out for the rest of the season and that Nigel de Jong was being transferred to Galatasaray. And I received a few sort of half-hearted, friendly, joking texts from some of the players and a few people within the staff saying, are you going to come back? Are you going to come back and help? And I reminded them that I haven't played a meaningful soccer game in almost 2 years. So that was not something I considered seriously. But the more I kind of started to think about it and talk to my family, I thought, well, if this is something the team really wants and needs and feels like I can help, then maybe it's something I should consider. So that was sort of the initial process.
Landon Donovan retired in December 2014 after leading the Los Angeles Galaxy to its fifth MLS Cup title and the record sixth championship of Donovan's MLS career. He is Major League Soccer's career leader in goals with 144, in assists with 136, in game-winning goals with 41, and in playoff goals with 25. Donovan says he's talked with Bruce Arena, the Galaxy's coach and general manager, about his role with the club.
I'm under no illusion that I'm going to come back and be able to play 90 minutes, maybe not for the rest of the year. But what I talked to Bruce about was I think I can get fit enough and get back into the groove enough where I can maybe make a few plays on the field that'll make a difference in the long run. Now, this team is loaded with talent there. A team that's had a lot of injuries but still find themselves in second place right now in the West, they don't need much, right? So, but losing Giassi, losing Nigel de Jong does hurt a little bit, and if I can help fill that void a little bit, that would be great. I think some of my qualities, even though the physical has gone a little bit, or in a game, I think I can make a difference. I think in the locker room and away from the field, I can help make a little bit of a difference. And if all those little things add up to one play or one moment that can help propel a team to the championship, that would feel great for me.
American soccer star Landon Donovan, who has ended his retirement and returned to Major League Soccer's Los Angeles Galaxy Club. The National Football League kicked off a new season Thursday night in the western U.S. city of Denver, Colorado. In a rematch of Super Bowl 50 earlier this year, the Denver Broncos edged the Carolina Panthers 21-20. The Panthers had a chance to win the game at the end, but place kicker Graham Gano missed a 50-yard field goal with 4 seconds left in the contest. The Panthers took a 17-7 lead into the fourth quarter, but the Broncos rallied on touchdowns by running back C.J. Anderson, one on a 25-yard pass from quarterback Trevor Siemian, and the other on a short 1-yard run. Now, Siemian is the successor to the now-retired Peyton Manning, and he got a win in his first NFL start, completing 18 of his 26 passes for 178 yards with one touchdown and two interceptions. His counterpart for Carolina, Cam Newton, the NFL's reigning most valuable player, was 18 of 33 for 194 yards with one touchdown and one interception. Meanwhile, the NFL team based here in the Washington area, the Washington Redskins, will officially open their season Monday night, September 12th, with a home game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. On this Friday, we bring you part two of Dan Friedel's interview with Redskins defensive end Ricky Jean-Francois. Here's Dan.
Some of the social issues that have been percolating in the U.S. lately, you've spoken out about it a little bit with some of the problems with the way police are treating African Americans. Do you take the opportunity that you have being in the spotlight as a professional athlete to make comments about that seriously?
I do, because each and every other day we're talking about change, but if nobody's voicing their opinion or no one is taking action, we can scream that each and every other day and nothing to be done. So now, as you can see, slowly but surely, things are changing. Things are being brought to attention. Topics are not being washed away no more. Now they're here. So hopefully as time goes on, things will change with that.
As somebody who's on the verge of turning 30 in a couple of months, I was curious, what do you think you would be doing with your life at this point if you hadn't become an NFL player?
I think I'd be somewhere in the world of technology, you know, trying to find a way to, you know, crack into Apple or Microsoft or Windows Media, one of those areas, because I just like being around those type of contraptions all day, from how phones can control vehicles. Like now I've seen on Twitter, the brand new Maybach 8 can be controlled by a remote control while you're standing outside of the car. Technology like that grows each and every other day. So I wanted to be a part of that growth and say I was one of the guys to be a part, or a guy that invented something that had something to affect their environment. Because you might have would just say, God bless the souls to Steve Jobs, everything that you basically touch of today has something through him that works. Whether it's your phone, whether it's earpiece, whether it's headphones, cards, just any type of technology. He was the guy that cracked open that way for a lot of different other businesses and a lot of different inventors to come out with their project and see can it help their environment or just help society in general.
Just want to remind our listeners that we're joined today on the Sunny Side of Sports by Washington Redskins defensive lineman Ricky Jean-Francois. For people who are on the metric system, much of the world is on the metric system. I looked this up earlier. You're 1.9 meters tall and weigh about 145 kilograms. What is it like to go through life as such a big person? Do you ever wish for a day that maybe you were the size of Lionel Messi?
I would like the sculpture of his body, you know. That's a great one. But, as days go on while you're in this world and you're the size of us, and don't get me wrong, I'm a big guy, but I ain't the biggest you probably see. You have guys way bigger than me. It's a norm. You know, you get people looking at you, staring at you sometimes, like if you were a statue or something, or you just see something that big, you know, around them. Because I know, like in London, Germany, on that side of the world, not many people are our size. That says a lot. So I know we have a game this year over in London, so I know when a lot of people from London get to see us, they're going to be at because, you know, you got guys from 6'7 to 6'8, 340 pounds. I don't know how to total that in metric yet, but you're going to have guys that size. You're going to have guys that size walking around London, and that's not a norm. So it's good to be that. But once you finish doing the sports you're in, yeah, you'll like to become normal size once again.
Gotcha. Well, so, you know, one of the videos that came out of the training camp earlier this summer was of you doing a job that's usually reserved for some of the smaller players in the NFL, and that's catching punts. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the story?
It was our last day of practice. We was going through our teams and our individual, and Coach Jay said during one of the periods, hey, we need somebody to catch a punt. At first, it was Chris Baker. You know, he took a few shots at it. I thought he can get it. Then out of nowhere, Coach said, Ricky, you go ahead and take a chance at it. It was so much pressure. I was nervous. Like I said, I take my hat off to all the guys in the NFL that are punt returners and kick returners, because I do not have the nerve to do that every time in a game. And everything depends on the catch you make. So when I finally got a chance to make that catch, I was just, you know, chills just ran down my spine. I was like, I really actually caught a punt during practice that ended camp. And everybody gets to go home. So that was a great experience.
One other question I had for you, Ricky, was about your post-career health. We're an international broadcaster, and a lot of what you see coming out about the NFL in Europe, in Asia, in Africa, has to do with some of the news of post-concussion syndrome and brain injuries. What's your philosophy? How do you balance out what you get out of being a player? You get some money, the platform, the unique experiences. How do you balance that out with the health risks later on?
When you're going into football, that should be the first thing that's been brought to your attention, your health risk. You know, you got some guys, before they even turn the age of 50, they got a hip replacement, a knee replacement. They have a surgery or, like you said, post-concussion. Guys are losing memory, guys are forgetting who their family is or how to get home. When you come in this game, you already got to put that at first, your health. Because anything is possible to happen to you. Knock on wood, it doesn't, but it may do. You know, at any given place, something may happen, and that may change not just your career, but change your life or how you do things. So when you go in there, that's one big risk you can take. I understand everybody look at the fame, the fortune, the stage, the pedestal you get put on. But if you get hurt or you have that post-concussion that really messes with your mind mentally, all that you went through and all the hardware that you earned and everything like that will only be what it is. It's just be a material thing, because the most important thing is really your health. Because when you're finished with football or whatever sport, you want to be able to pick up your child. You want to be able to run around. You want to be able to, you know, pick them up from school, go outside, play catch, or throw the football, or baseball, tennis, whatever. You want to be able to do that with your kid, because that is the dream that every parent should have, to be able to play with their kids and be able to run around their kids. But due to our sport, some make it out good, some make it out blessed, and, you know, some have a few dings here and there. So it's just up to you how long you can take this pounding on your body and your brain.
Ricky, thanks for joining us on the Sunny Side of Sports. We wish you a successful and healthy 2016 season.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
That's Ricky Jean-Francois, defensive end for the National Football League's Washington Redskins Club. And Ricky was talking with Dan Friedel of the VOA's Learning English Department. By the way, Dan also has an article on the new NFL season at the VOA Learning English webpage. Go to learningenglish.voanews.com. Once again, that address, learningenglish.voanews.com. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Happy Friday and sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings and a very happy Friday to you too.
Andrew, what's trending in the sports world on this Friday?
The shocking result from last night, Serena Williams upset in the semifinals of the U.S. Open, losing to Karolina Pliskova 6-2, 7-6. This is the second year in a row that Serena's gone out in the semifinals, and the second year in a row where she's been heavily favored to win, and she's failed to do so. So a shocking result. Not as shocking as last year. Serena, of course, had the calendar Grand Slam on the line last year, and she lost to Roberta Vinci, who I think was ranked in the 50s. Karolina Pliskova is ranked number 11, and she was the 10th seed in this tournament. So not as surprising, but Serena was not playing her best out there. A lot of people noted that on social media, saying that it looked like she was injured. And in fact, Serena, after the match, said she was having problems with her knee. But a very surprising result, which means, in addition to the fact that she won't win the U.S. Open this year, she will remain tied for right now at 22 majors, tied with Steffi Graf, 186 consecutive weeks at number one, tied with Steffi Graf, because with this loss, Serena Williams loses that number one ranking, which now goes to Angelique Kerber. She will be the new number one.
And Andrew, Serena certainly not getting any younger at this stage of her career. I checked the records. She celebrates her 35th birthday at the end of this month, September 26th. What's your take? I mean, can she get that 23rd major title?
I think she can. I really do. I think that one of the things that a lot of the commentators have been talking about is that Serena and Venus didn't really play a lot of junior tournaments. They went right into these professional tournaments at a young age. So they haven't been around quite as long and haven't been playing quite as long as some of the other players that played the junior tournaments and then went into the professional tournaments. And they've had some time off for injuries and other things, Serena and Venus. So given that they've had some time off to rest, I think that, you know, they have a longer chance at a career than perhaps other players who have gone straight through. Whether this was physical or mental, whether it was that trying to reach for that 23rd major victory and best Steffi Graf, who can say? I mean, Serena in the press conference last night, they asked her, was it physical, was it mental? She really didn't want to talk about it very much. So we'll see. I think she's certainly got the determination and the drive to do it. And I, for one, as a big Serena fan, hope she does. But we'll see. But yeah, Steffi Graf, you know, is arguably the, you know, one of the greatest, if not the greatest player on the women's side. So it's a lot to try to live up to. But it's actually interesting. Steffi Graf, even though she's not playing anymore, she was so much a part of last night because Serena equaled her weeks at number one, equaled her 22 major wins, didn't best them. And then Angelique Kerber taking over that number one spot, which she'll take on Monday, is the first German woman to have number one since Steffi Graf. And an informal advisor to Angelique Kerber, Steffi Graf. So Steffi Graf has been very much involved in this. So there was actually some speculation. Maybe Steffi was trying to help Angelique so she could protect her records and so Angelique could best Serena. But unfortunately, we won't see that number one and number two matchup in the final. It'll be Angelique Kerber and Karolina Pliskova.
On the men's side, Andrew, we have four men left. It's Djokovic against Monfils and Wawrinka against Nishikori. Who do you like?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think Gael Monfils has had such a great hard court season. And Novak Djokovic, as we've seen in the past couple months, is not infallible. You can be beaten. He was beaten in, I think, the third round by Sam Querrey at Wimbledon. He lost in the first round to Del Potro at the Olympics. So Djokovic can be beaten. That being said, I think he's kind of come around mentally, and I think he's doing better. So I guess I would give the edge to Djokovic. But I'd like to see Monfils go far. And then on the other side, you know, I think it's a toss-up. Nishikori's been there before. He's made it to the finals a couple years ago where he lost to Marin Cilic. Wawrinka has been a champion at majors before in Australia and Roland Garros. So I think they're both going to be really quality matches. I think they're going to be good ones to watch tonight.
What else is trending on this Friday, Andrew?
Well, other than tennis, which I could talk about for a whole half hour, but I won't. The Paralympics are going on in Brazil, so we have some medal total updates. So far, going into today, China is in the lead as far as gold medals with 8, followed by Great Britain with 6, and then tied for 3rd is Uzbekistan and host country Brazil, and then a slew of countries, including the United States, tied for 2nd in terms of gold medals. The overall medal leaders, you have China as number one. They have 21 medals, followed by Great Britain with 15, the Netherlands with 11. Ukraine comes in at 4th with 10 medals, and then Uzbekistan and the United States are tied with 8 medals, so they're tied for 5th. So China with the early lead, 21 medals so far for their athletes, so a good showing from China. We'll see if they can keep that up or if some of these other countries maybe can move forward. I'm particularly looking at the United States, the United Kingdom, and Australia, because of those are the countries that participate in the Invictus Games, which Prince Harry, we've talked about on the show before, Prince Harry has formed the Invictus Games as a way for servicemen and women who have been injured in service to compete. So I think there's a lot of crossover between the Invictus Game athletes and the Paralympic athletes. There are a lot of veterans that are competing in the Paralympics. So I would look for those three countries to do quite well because they have very strong athletes, very strong veterans who have shown their, tested their mettle and their strength on the battlefield, and now are doing it in the athletic arena.
And one country you did not mention, Andrew, Russia. Of course, the Russians were banned from the Paralympics because of doping allegations. And, you know, there's controversy regarding that decision, but we'll follow the Paralympics.
Absolutely.
More to come. Thank you, Andrew. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. And that wraps up the September 9th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Peter Hundley. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a good weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For a while, it looked like the 2.5-year-old civil war in South Sudan might finally be over. In August of last year, both Salva Kiir and Riek Machar signed a peace agreement to end the conflict, the terms of which confirmed Salva Kiir as president and returned Riek Machar to government as the first vice president. But just months after Riek Machar returned to South Sudan to resume his vice presidential duties, violence resumed and Machar fled. One of the most heinous aspects of South Sudan's civil war is the forced conscription of child soldiers, children younger than 18, with far too many under the age of 15. According to UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Agency, since South Sudan's civil war began in December 2013, over 16,000 children have been recruited into armed groups on both sides. UNICEF has reported on the recruitment of child soldiers since the July 7th outbreak of violence. Both sides are using various methods, including coercion and blackmail, to force parents to surrender their children to them. The United States is profoundly alarmed by the UNICEF report. Above and beyond our calls for an end to ongoing violence in South Sudan, we insist on an immediate halt to the unlawful recruitment and use of child soldiers by government and opposition forces. Individuals responsible for the unlawful recruitment or use of child soldiers for armed groups or forces may be subject to sanction under U.S. law and may be targeted for U.N. sanctions, said State Department spokesman John Kirby in a written statement. The continued unlawful recruitment and use of children in armed conflict in South Sudan is unacceptable. Eliminating the unlawful recruitment and use of child soldiers for armed groups in South Sudan is a leading priority of the United States. We remain committed to securing accountability for those who recruit and use children as soldiers.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information. Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.